Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. We return to the world of the paranormal today, as I'm joined by one of the leading parapsychologists in the world, Lloyd Auerbach. Lloyd discusses some of his most notable cases that are featured in his newly updated and re-released version of his classic book, A Paranormal Casebook. From visitations to misperceptions, classic hauntings and messages from beyond, Lloyd touches on some of the fantastic cases included in his latest release. But before we join Lloyd, of course, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. You can also click the link in the show notes as usual. Mysteries and Monsters is across all social media platforms. You can visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes and news. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also visit our merchandise store, available through TeePublic, and thank you to each and every one of you that has continued to buy merchandise. It's greatly appreciated. I hope you're all looking very smart. Our intro and outro music is performed by the marvellous Weary Pines. Thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his wonderful artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange Network. To California now, to join the marvellous Lloyd Auerbach. The popularity of the paranormal has probably never been more so than in the last decade, though awash with a lack of critical analysis. Yet the same questions that inspired Crowe, Price, Holzer and more still remain, and my guest today is one of the paranormal's most sharpest of minds. With over 4 decades of research and a newly updated version of his fantastic book, A Paranormal Casebook, Lloyd Auerbach is one of the most highly respected parapsychologists in the world today. Lloyd, I'm delighted to welcome you to Mysteries and Monsters for the very first time, so my apologies.
Thank you, Paul. Pleasure to be here.
No, thank you. Thank you for fitting me in, sir. You're one of those people that I've been aware of for so long, Lloyd. I feel you're one of those people in this particular field that I feel like I've grown up with, though I'm not that young. So I'm not doing either of us a disservice in regards to age, because as long as cable television has been pumping paranormal content into my living room over the years, you've always seemed to have been a constant presence in for a large portion of it. And you are someone that has been widely respected with your knowledge and your investigative processes and the way that you've adapted yourself over that period. I'm really intrigued because a lot of people, when I say to them, what got you into the paranormal or the world of the strange, most people talk about In Search Of or certain other programs. But I mean, obviously you were a televisual addict due to your father working for NBC, so you were sort of exposed to television at quite a young age. But you've often mentioned Dark Shadows, which is a program not many people talk about.
Yeah. I mean, it was very popular in the 1960s as a soap opera. Granted, it was about vampires and werewolves but it had ghosts, it had parallel worlds and the whole bit. And they talked about parapsychology quite a bit. There were a couple of characters who were parapsychologists. And it was at a time when I was a bit of a science geek as a kid, and really into science fiction and comic books, and I liked folklore. So I went to the library just on a whim to look for books on vampires and werewolves, but I had also heard the word parapsychology a bunch of times on Dark Shadows. And of course, it's all in the same section of the Dewey Decimal System, which is for good or for bad for parapsychology. You know, vampires, werewolves, witchcraft, parapsychology, all together. So I discovered that there actually were science books. I mean, I read Hans Holzer's books about all that, but it was really great to see that there was actual research being done. And it had just left Duke University there, but I then learned about the SPR and other organizations as well. So it really put me on the path.
Mm. Do you think you were quite fortunate at that point, Lloyd? Because it's one of those things that, I mean, here in the UK, trying to get connected up with a parapsychology course seems quite hard. And yet you seem to have a great amount of fortune or good luck. I mean, sometimes people are fated for their career paths. And it seems that you were very fortunate that you had a lot of like-minded people, both in your family and around you in education, that helped sort of nurture and guide you in towards creating the career that you have done over so long.
Yeah, I think being in the right place at the right time clearly was in the stars for me in so many different ways. The fact that I had teachers who were interested in parapsychology and was able to start a parapsychology club at my high school. And then I had a neighbor whose clients was Montague Ullman, a well-respected parapsychologist.
Yeah.
Got to meet him. And then another parapsychologist through him, Gertrude Schmeidler, who lived within 3 miles of me, actually, both of them. So that timing, and then the timing of the JFK parapsychology program, and all of that, one thing after another, just kind of fell into place in so many different ways. And, it also is interesting that when I worked my first job at the American Society for Psychical Research, that's the first job that I really had in the field outside of graduate school. Alex Tanis, who was our psychic, who was doing out-of-body research, I was working with him a little bit and a little bit with Dr. Carlos Osis. And so I was kind of getting a mentorship from a researcher who'd done lots of investigations and a psychic who'd done lots of investigations. And that also spurred me on to having my own experiences. So it really has been one thing right after another for me.
Yeah. I think it's one of those great moments, because obviously I've had the pleasure of speaking to Barry Taff a couple of years ago, and he was obviously working kind of parallel to yourself, obviously in different education systems. And it seemed that particular period, I think the 1970s seemed to be quite furtive in regards to the way that people were thinking about things and how people were sort of approaching the concepts of, is the consciousness the real sort of driving force for a lot of people? And it seemed that there was a lot of sort of pollination from other fields, and people were kind of, as you were talking about, in regards to things like folklore and other such sort of existential sciences, as people might consider it at that particular period, that people started to think it was more than just moldy old ghosts wandering around everywhere, Lloyd. There was perhaps a bit more to this than meets the eye.
Yeah, I think that the 70s, you know, it's kind of like an extension of the 1960s mind expansion kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there was a huge interest in consciousness and unusual phenomena. The publishing industry was publishing, it's often called the occult explosion in publishing at that point, because, you know, mass market paperbacks were everywhere, and there were mass market paperbacks on anything to do with the occult, anything to do with parapsychology, anything from psychic. I mean, just so much out there in the 70s. And, and that really kind of opened up a lot of things academically. But then also it was the time that the organized skeptics got moving towards the latter part of the 1970s. And that became a problem for us.
Well, not for you, because you're one of those people that's always fought your corner very well, Lloyd.
Yeah, well, you know, I think partly there's several reasons for that. One is I'm also a magician and mentalist, so I can kind of argue a lot of that. I know the kind of the false arguments from magicians quite a bit, pretty well. But also growing up in and around NBC, my dad was eventually a sports producer, but I got to know a number of news people. And my uncle was a radio newscaster for WMCA radio in New York City, and he was a skeptic too. So I grew up with that, you know, discussing that with him. And I got this great advice about, you know, say what you believe, say what your opinion is, which is not necessarily what your belief is, and be really clear about that. And what I found from the skeptics over the years, with a couple of exceptions, like, you know, James Randi, that being totally honest and saying what I what I believe in, but here's what we have to look at and the questions we have to ask has gotten me really good mileage with skeptics, the pseudo skeptics, in so many different ways. And I've been told by some of them, you're the only one we talk to who actually says what he believes in parapsychology.
Well, I think that's always been important because one of the things that I've always appreciated about your work is the scientific method. And I know, especially this in this modern era where cable channels are awash with ghost hunting shows and everybody turns up with all these gadgets. And it baffles me, Lloyd, as to why people think technology means that they're being scientific, when often most of these gadgets that they use are next to useless. They seem to give a predisposed result that the person using it is wanting, or that the user has no idea how to use the actual gadget. Right. They've just gone running to the nearest haunted house and hope for the best.
Well, you know, they see these examples on reality TV, and unfortunately people are not really educated as to how reality TV works and that it's not really reality. It's unscripted, but it's not reality. There was an episode of our show, The Daily Show, years ago, when Steve Chu, who was the former director of the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, was on The Daily Show. He was at that point the Secretary of Education in the United States under Obama.
Yeah.
And he made the comment that there's a problem with science education. And he even made the comment that people conflate technology and science as the same thing. Mm. And that's very, very clear with the ghost hunting community so much that the ideas that they picked up from television because they see what they think are good conclusions. And of course, the guys on TV often talk about being scientific and they're clearly being television. They're not being scientific.
Yeah.
It's this idea that if you use a scientific or supposedly technological tool, but people forget that technology also covers things like flint arrowheads and obsidian knives.
Yes.
And almost anything that is human made, engineered, or even chip made, because chimpanzees use tools too.
Yes.
Is technically technology. We're just thinking about high tech, but you have to look and see what they're designed to do. I mean, computers don't do everything we want. Even AI right now that's coming out there doesn't do everything and it makes stuff up. So clearly you got to be careful and you got to know what you're doing with that. And, I usually tell my students that I'm teaching a technology course right now. And I've usually told my students that if that was the case, if using technologies make you scientific, then every person who uses a microwave is a scientist. And almost none of them know how it works.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing often. I think when we talk about how to explain technology in a simple and easy to understand manner, most people are aware of everything that we have. You can walk into your front room, you've got your smart TV, you've got your internet. But the average person can't tell you how they work. They just know it works.
Right, right. Yeah, and then there's the application of it. I mean, there's so many of these devices that are designed for environmental stuff, but they're using it for a completely different application, or at least taking the data and misusing it. I mean, I'm not going to use a hammer to crack eggs because that's not what it's designed for. Mm. I mean, it can do that, but it's not going to give me something I can actually use. And the right tool for the right thing is important. And unfortunately, we don't know enough about what we're trying to detect. In fact, we don't know anything about what we're technically trying to detect when it comes to ghostly stuff. Mm. You can't design something if you don't know what, at least have some idea of what it is you're trying to detect.
Yeah. I think that's the problem as well. I think as I've heard other people talk about this, I think one of the big aspects of this is that a lot of people in the modern ghost hunting era don't really have any sort of qualifications, as it were. They don't have any interest in parapsychology or any of the social sciences that get them to that point where you have a better understanding of people and the dynamics of relationships and stresses and how these environmental aspects can sometimes trigger a haunting. Because this is the other aspect of this, that you have to kind of pull away from this overriding belief that all hauntings are spirits or manifestations of deceased people, because throughout all the books I've read over the years and the people that I've spoken to previously, Lloyd, it isn't a one size fits all. There are so many aspects to it, and I've seen so many cases where stress and environmental pressures on specific people seem to have caused a haunting for them and their families.
Right. Yeah, it is not one size fits all, and there's a lot of folklore created by media. Even amongst psychics, I mean, there's an enormous, just the whole idea of the cold spot being the key when in fact it's really rare to measure any change in temperature, even if people feel cold. And it originally came from that folklore comes from the theatrical device of showing people's cold breath in a movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't come from reality. Mm. So really, it boils down to people needing to know, number one, that we're starting with humans who are labeling things as ghosts, hauntings, poltergeists, things like that. And it's not the case that all we observe is necessarily what you think it is. I mean, that's really clear in general in perception. So why should ghosts be that way? Why? And you know, I have to talk to people about, I hear people say, well, there are ghosts everywhere. It's like, well, there's maybe memories lingering everywhere, but there's not like everybody who dies isn't sticking around as a ghost. I mean, you would have a lot more experiences than people are reporting these days or have ever reported. There's so much folklore even around all of this that we see, and we have to kind of cut it through it. And some of it's culturally based. Some of it comes from pop culture. Different cultures have different beliefs in the subject.
Yeah. I think sometimes that kind of train of thought as well can be quite damaging, especially when people are grieving, Lloyd, because there are certain circumstances where there will be a family unit and someone in that particular group will receive a visitation or what they believe to be a visitation and other members won't. And that seems to start this kind of paranormal competition that the family, they don't, am I not worthy to be visited? Why was this particular person their favourite? And I think if you look at it in a very sort of cut and dried manner, that it's someone coming back to say a final message or for closure or whatever, that on top of the grieving process can be extremely damaging for people.
I think only if it's seen as a competitive situation. I work with the Forever Family Foundation.
Yes.
Which works with we test and certify evidential mediums. There have been studies on the use of mediumship with clinical psychology as a positive thing for grief relief. But there are those people where, just as you said, it can be, you know, why did dad come to you instead of the rest of us? You know, if they come to people like me or to the mediums that we work with, then we can explain, well, you know, maybe you weren't open to it. Maybe there was a perceptual issue. You know, there's reasons why. But those are family dynamics, by the way, that are irrespective of whether or not they had a visitation or not. Those, and they're pretty rare, what we find. What I hear sometimes is just kind of an over belief, so to speak, is the signs. People are looking for signs that their loved ones are coming back. And in reality, if it gives them some relief from grief, if they think that symbol that they keep seeing, which they probably have never noticed before, is representative of that person, that's fine. If it's going to help their grieving, that's okay. It's only when somebody tries to take advantage of that it becomes a problem. Or when you have the infighting in the families, I guess. I was going to say, that's an indication for family counseling, not for a medium, actually.
Well, yes, and I think it's one of those things that you've got to be very careful of, because I think if you don't get a variety of information sometimes, Lloyd, you can end up getting the wrong information that gives you a negative response to those kind of things, like you say, because I've had friends that have had, who are very skeptical and don't believe in any of it, who have had very odd sort of signs, as it were, like random feathers appearing in a closed house where it could never have been, or here in the UK, I'm not sure what it's like in North America, a lot of people put credence in seeing a robin as though that's a sign that someone's come back to them.
It's butterflies. It's butterflies here, it seems.
Yeah. Well, but like you say, I think if it gives somebody comfort and it helps that process and it helps them heal, then we shouldn't pour scorn on that. I mean, like you say, unless people manipulate it and try and make out that it's something else that's going on, then that's a very different kettle of fish. But I think for those kind of people, they often need that kind of comfort to help them move forwards.
That is correct. Now, you know, there are exceptions in many respects. What I've seen on occasion for like group readings at some of our conferences is the one person who is not hearing what she thinks she needs to hear. From, you know, and because there was a woman at one of our conferences a few years ago, every medium communicated with her son who died in a car accident when she was driving. Oh. And it was really clear she felt guilty about the whole thing. And every medium gave her more and more information from this kid who died. Right. And whether it was genuine or not, didn't matter. It was exactly what she had said she wanted to hear in other conversations. But she kept going to other mediums and we couldn't figure out what else she needed. So every medium was saying, you need counseling. You yeah. serious? I mean, that was the recommendation from every one of those mediums to this woman. But my guess is that she was going to keep hitting up every single medium until she hears that one final piece that, and it wasn't even that she knows what she's looking for. She just isn't accepting at all. And people like that, there are people who are just simply not going to be able to move on because there's something else going on. In this case, it was guilt.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that can be quite damaging, like you say, because they're chasing something they're never going to get resolved unless they follow the right path.
And they won't get it from a psychologist either. Mm. You know, they're not going to get it from pretty much anybody. And, you know, unfortunately, if they go into therapy and they're not taking advantage of appropriate therapy, they're going to be seeing therapists. They're going to spend a lot more money with therapists than mediums at that point.
Yes, absolutely. It's certainly a quest for deep pockets, if nothing else.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And obviously, you've re-released one of your classic books, Lloyd, a paranormal casebook. Was there any particular reason for an update? Because you've been a prolific author over the years since your first book back in 1986.
Well, right. First one was 86. So that was that book, paranormal casebook. People have been asking for it. So I finally got the rights back a few years ago. And from the publisher wasn't interested in continuing to publish it. What I saw I had to update, though, was the front matter and back matter, because some of it was severely out of date or just needed some more exposition in there. So I really updated that. I didn't really touch the cases in there so much. People have been asking me to add additional cases. And as I was trying to figure out if I should do that, I realized I have enough for another book. So I may be writing a second case book. In fact, I will be writing another case book. I just don't know that I'll get it out this year, probably next year for that.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting that you mentioned that, because obviously we've just been talking about the visitations and grief. And I had to smile when I started reading it, because I'd forgotten that you related this story about Martin Caden. Now, obviously, I wasn't aware of Martin till about a couple of years ago. And then obviously someone made the decision to start re-releasing Art Bell's old interviews, Lloyd, where obviously you've appeared on several of those. And obviously one of them was from 1994 when Martin was on, when he just released Ghosts of the Air. Mm-hmm. And it always struck me that, first of all, I thought, wow, this book sounds brilliant. So I ended up managing to find a copy for a steal. And I'm very glad that the person who sold it clearly didn't realise how much it would have meant to me, Lloyd. Otherwise, they'd have been charging me quite a bit. But what struck me, and reading your chapter about that and the incidents that occurred after his untimely passing, was that he was a very matter-of-fact person. He knew what he wanted to talk about, and he knew about the experiences he had. Some of the stories he told were incredible, really, because not only was he a deep believer in the paranormal and all aspects of it, it would seem, he had a wide range of interests. He was an incredibly talented scriptwriter. He was an incredible aviator. He was a man of many talents, it would seem, Lloyd.
Oh, yeah, no question, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and he, Martin Caden, I mean, most people would know, the one work they would know by him would be The $6 Million Man.
Yes.
Because he wrote the book Cyborg and actually worked on the show as well. And he also, late 1960s, with Gregory Peck, it won an Academy Award, in fact. Oh. And it actually stimulated the Russian cosmonauts to contact NASA to do the joint Apollo-Soyuz mission. So that book was actually very influential in the space program. And Marty was connected to the space program since the early 60s, In fact, one of the times I visited him in Cocoa Beach, you know, one day he gets a call and apparently it's the PR department at NASA at the Cape. And I hear him talking to them, correcting them on the history of NASA. And he was their living history. Basically, it was easier for them to call him. And then right after we finished that call, he said, hey, let's go over to Cape. We'll get a VIP tour. And we just walked through the gate pretty much and got this incredible tour. So he was really well connected in that area, too. Very matter of fact about the paranormal. I mean, I met him at a conference and my dad had known him 30 years before because my father was also involved in the coverage of the Mercury and Gemini space shots for NBC. And my first exposure to Martin Kaden in person after having coincidentally 2 days before turned on the TV, flipping channels and hearing his name on an episode of a show I'd never watched called Stuntmasters.
Right.
was him at a press conference. He and I were at a press conference and he says, tonight I'm going to move some stuff with my mind. It's like, what? I had not heard. It's like, I didn't know where that came from. Yeah. And he did. Yeah. So later that night, so we connected, we bonded when he found out who my dad was and he remembered my father. So, I worked a lot with him, over the years, the few years he had left before he passed away.
Mm. I mean, this is the thing as well, because there's clearly, you know, as I say, it's over a quarter of a century since he sadly passed.
And yeah.
Reading that, it's quite clear how much he still means to this day, Lloyd, because like I say, I've only heard him on some brief interviews from that early sort of early to mid 90s period. And he's one of those people. I really like the cut of his jib, as we would say over here, because he's got a wonderful storyteller. But also, I remember that they did open lines and somebody rang up and it really, really annoyed him because this person was just talking nonsense and he just shut them down. He went, no, I'm not talking about that. That's not true, and moved on. So he clearly also thought a lot of you, Lloyd, regardless of his relationship with your father, because he seemed to, as you say in the book, he welcomed you into his family with open arms and you became fast friends almost from the off.
And actually, going back to the skeptic thing, he was a big influence on me and how I deal with skeptics, too. Being a little bit more aggressive sometimes with some of them. But yeah, he was I consider him one of my mentors. I've had some really good folks in and around the field over the years, and he's one of the people who influenced me a lot.
Yeah. I mean, when you look back as to the events that happened after he passed, as we were saying, there's a very similar thing, because we had something in my family when my auntie passed away. I mean, I'm older than my auntie was when she passed 36 years ago now. Goodness. And so after that, my mum had an experience where she was awoken at night through an aroma of Olbus oil because she was suffering horrifically from cancer, and they were using that as early, I suppose, an early form of aromatherapy, Lloyd. And so they were woken by this overwhelming aroma coming into the room that woke them both, and then it just dissipated almost instantly, and there was nowhere for it to come from. Something very similar happened to you and several other people after Martin passed away, as though he was on tour, it would seem.
Yeah, I think he was on tour. I mean, honestly, it was a week and a half later and alone in my relatively new car, which still smelled like a new car, very early in the morning, driving to the airport to fly up to Portland, Oregon, from the Bay Area, from Oakland, California. And my car filled up the smell, no smoke, but it filled up the smell of very, very stinky cigar smoke. And it was definitely his brand. And I actually felt a presence sitting in the seat next to me. Didn't see anybody, but I felt a presence. And after talking to nobody for a little while, this was 7 in the morning Pacific time, it was gone. It was lasted maybe 4 to 5 minutes. And when I got up to Portland, I picked up, before I even left the airport, I picked up, went to a payphone, if people remember those, because this is all in the pre-cell phone days.
Yes.
I called a friend of Marty's who was a pilot friend I'd met many times in Florida. The guy was actually from New Jersey. I called him up, got him on the phone. And before I could tell him what happened to me, he told me that it was an incredible coincidence. He actually said, you must be psychic, Lloyd, because you're calling me now, because I just had this experience flying my plane. And his experience happened at basically 10:10 Eastern, which is 7:10 Pacific. So 10 minutes later than mine. And he had just gotten off the phone from another pilot friend of theirs 10 minutes later, had the same experience in his plane. And it was 25 of us over a 2.5 week period. Bob called me back and said, look, I count 25 people, all including just us, couple before, but several after, and always alone in a car or alone in a plane.
Hmm.
The same exact same experience each time.
I suppose in your experience, Lloyd, because you've, I mean, one of the other aspects of your work is that you've dealt with such a wide variety of cases across the board, yeah. It would seem. Have you ever come across anything of that nature, so similar, where such a wide variety of people seem to have had a visitation or felt a presence, perhaps?
Not over that amount of time. There are plenty of cases on record going back to the early days of the SPR and the ASPR, where one family member might see somebody like at the moment of death or right after. And then within a few minutes, several other members of the family that or friends who are not anywhere near there also have similar just a visitation of that type. But I not to that extent. But Marty, you know, I know that Marty was a pretty strong-willed guy. I actually was surprised it took him a week and a half, honestly, yes. Because he had always told me he was going to haunt me. And I, you know, skeptics said, well, you expected that. It's like, that was unexpected.
Yeah.
Timing-wise. If it had happened to me the first day, maybe the first two, okay, I would have given it as a possible suggestion. Mm. But it wasn't even in my consciousness at that point. Mm. But it was a really unusual series of events for everybody, and for it to be the same experience for everybody also is fairly unique. But he was just, like I said, strong-willed, and he might have visited a whole bunch of other people around the world. We just don't know.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You're only as aware of the relationships that you would have had and they would have had.
Right.
And knowing Martin's career, he probably did, Lloyd.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure.
I mean, obviously, Do you put any sort of credence in this kind of aspect sometimes that people would say such a visitation, because it was done as an aroma, it has more of an emotional impact? Because often there is this kind of train of thought that if you smell a certain cologne or a favorite meal or a certain smell in a certain area, it seems to transport you back to somewhere and sort of gives you a feeling of presence that perhaps is more powerful than, say, just simply seeing a ghost or an apparition, perhaps. And that gives you a richer depth of perception in regards to the experience you're having.
Yeah, you know, very much smell can definitely do that. We have there's something in memory called red integration, where some stimulus causes you to remember or reminds you of something in your past. So maybe you see something and all of a sudden you're smelling apple pie because your grandmother used to make apple pie all the time, and you don't know where that's coming from because it's not anywhere here. It's not necessarily a spiritual thing. It can be just that kind of memory recall. But there is a whole category of olfactory apparitions, which are smell based and seem to move around or maneuver in a way that indicates some kind of consciousness behind it. In fact, my very first, I count this as my first apparitional experience. I was visiting, this is back when I was living in New York area. I was with a couple of buddies from our local Society of American Magicians at that point. So we're visiting with one of them who was living in some part, an older guy who was a mentalist also.
Yeah.
And Mike and I were in there, and Bill is we're talking about the paranormal because they were both really interested. And Bill said, you know, I'm pretty sure my wife shows up every once in a while, especially when I talk about her. And I didn't ask, you know, what is it that what happens? And all of a sudden we're both smelling, or all three of us are smelling, this unusual perfume. And Bill says, well, that's my wife. That's her perfume. And he said, I've moved five times. I don't have anything of hers here. There is nothing that could possibly have generated that. So all three of us are sniffing the air, and it's moving around.
Yeah.
It wasn't stationary. It was literally moving through. So it would have been very funny to video that, with us sniffing the air and following this moving thing. So, you know, apparitions can be, it's how we perceive, sometimes it's how they present themselves, but very often it's what our capability is to perceive a certain thing, whether it's visual or auditory or olfactory or whatever else.
Mm. I mean, obviously, one of the cases in the book, you talk about a woman whose husband had passed away, and he decided to come back to check in on her while she'd started dating again, Lloyd. Mm-hmm. In regards to that particular case that you're talking about there, was there any kind of sort of hangover from her passing? You know, because sometimes people can feel as though someone's looking out for them or whatever. Do you think she was just passing by to see if he was okay?
So the case of this woman whose husband was checking in her when she was dating, she did not recognize him at all. Mm. She was seeing a faceless guy. And her son, who was, I think, 11 or 12 at the time, was seeing him with the face and said, "Mom," kept on telling his mother, "That's Dad." And she was insistent that it was not him. Mm. So actually, Alex Tennis from the ASPR and Dr. Rosas checked into this case, and Alex immediately started communicating, and it was Frank, the woman's husband. And he was able to get enough information to convince her that that really was him, stuff he could not possibly have known. And also the reason why he was checking in, because she was dating and he was worried about her dates. So he had to broker a truce in that case, when he could come and when he could not. And she was a kind of trying to be a psychic. She was learning to do readings and stuff herself. So she couldn't quite understand why she couldn't see his face. And the answer was she didn't want to.
Yeah.
And it was a psychological reason why she didn't see the face.
Yeah. I mean, there's another strange case in the book, which is the Peeping Tom case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lloyd. And that one is a very peculiar one, because as you say, you will often hear about people who feel uncomfortable or they feel that they're being watched. And I've heard first person accounts of people on shows like Jim Harold's Campfire and the like, where mm-hmm. you'll have people ring up who feel like they're being touched or whatever. And I certainly remember a ghost to ghost call from many years ago on Art Bell, where someone was essentially being harassed every time they had a shower. But I've never come across something like this, that it was picking on both the mother and daughter.
Well, I think it's because in that case, the mother and daughter were both very attractive. Mm. The daughter was 16, the mother was 36, both very, very attractive. And this young guy who had died somewhere ahead discovered them and was popping in and out. You know, a lot of the kind of crazy movies about college life or high school life, you see, you know, a kid gets the power of invisibility.
Yes.
And what's the first thing he does? He goes to the girls' locker room.
Yes.
To watch them in the shower. You know, it's kind of a teenage young. It makes sense in some respect. It's hard to say that when people feel like they're being watched or in some way, that is a presence, an actual apparition or ghost in some way. It just could be some inner fears. It could be a number of other things as well. And, you know, maybe it is somebody watching. I think the biggest problem for people once they get past the general fear of seeing a ghost or experience a ghost is thinking about invasion of privacy. Mm. Because that entity, that person can jump in any pop up and may not see them watching you. And that's, I think, to me, that should be the main concern of people, not that whether or not the ghost is going to hurt them otherwise. Is that kind of issue of privacy. And we as living people, it's not hard to actually block that out as it happens.
I suppose as well, it's often one of those things that we often don't take into consideration what the apparitions may be feeling or how they're going, because we often hear about people that buy a property and everything seems fine for a couple of years, and then they may move things around or redecorate, and that seems to be the trigger sometimes. Or I mean, there's another wonderful story in there where you had that family who were seeing that little girl and that woman with this incredible sort of symbiotic relationship with this small child ghost, which when you read it, I suppose, unless you've been there and investigated it, Lloyd, it beggars belief, really, that she would describe seeing a small child crawl into her lap as though she just wanted to hug her. I mean, that's a remarkable case.
There are positive apparitional sightings across the board. You can find them not on TV, because they rarely ever make it. Maybe in some of the comedy films. I think, you know, there's actually more ghost films, which are comedies and dramas, than there are horror films.
Yeah.
Which is a really positive thing. And that just shows that ghosts are really people. So. Yeah. So in that case that you're describing, the unusual thing about that, and it's not certainly that unusual, but the activity was unusual, is that this was actually a projection of a woman who was still alive. It was what we call an apparition of the living, where the woman was dreaming about visiting her childhood home down the street as a child, which is where she grew up. And the folks at the other end saw her. So we might say she was having an out-of-body experience during that time, but the times kind of correlated to certain issues of her being unconscious. She was a cancer patient, a terminal cancer patient. And there was enough really good evidence of information that really indicated this was what was actually going on. That in itself was highly unusual. It wasn't why we were called into the case. If you recall reading the story, we were called in because there were bad spots in the house and the garage, which connected to a previous owner, not this woman or her family at all. So you can have cases also that have multiple things, which really muddy the waters quite a bit in some of our instances. Certainly for ghost hunters, I've talked to people who've run into situations where there is that imprint, that haunting, the residual stuff, and there's an apparition or there's poltergeist activity, and they can't seem to separate those at all. And you have to if you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's the problem by going at it in an overarching, as we were saying, it's one phenomenon where you have, like you say, that particular case is a prime example where it's essentially like an onion. You've got so many levels to it that you have to sort of try and separate things to see, because if you go at that thinking, well, why are they getting strange sensations in the garage, but they're having this sort of lovely experience in the house? Then you end up confusing it or missing the point of what's going on there. And like you say in that one, it you need to sort of adapt and change to each scenario, because often, as you say, television will always give a negative interpretation of particular hauntings. But my personal experience, the vast majority of cases that I've read that I haven't seen on television, the haunting seems to be quite a positive experience. People seem to enjoy having a ghost.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's really interesting that this whole idea of peeling the onion is a good way to put it, because what we have in most instances is more than just one person seeing or two people seeing a ghost and that's it. They have continued phenomena, or at least they report that. Otherwise, you know, I've taught my students, if it's only one person who's seen something and that's all it is, and the person's not seeing anything again and nothing's happening, there's nothing to investigate. You can do an interview, but there's no investigation necessary at that point. But what happens sometimes is, in many instances, is people have that one-off experience and they're freaked out by it or scared by it or completely confused by it. And now they're overly sensitive to everything in their house. So when we go in a case, we can say overall, is this an apparition case, a haunting case, a poltergeist case? Maybe. But we have to look at each and every separate event and determine whether it has a normal explanation, no matter how unusual, or if it fits a different type of phenomena. Is it one of these mixed up cases that we might actually have? And we find that for the most part, even in the best of cases, you tend to find something that has an explanation that is not paranormal at all, which I see people all the time lumping into the same category.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a prime example of that is one of the most amusing stories. And I think more paranormal investigators and parapsychologists should discuss stories like this, Lloyd, which is obviously the case where you were called in to a couple who seemed to be bothered by footsteps that seemed to happen at 11 o'clock every night. And it made me chuckle, because obviously when you think of strange noises come from an attic and you're on the hunt for ghosts, there for the grace of God go I. But it just made me chuckle, because it does show you that a completely rational explanation can be just conflated so much purely because it's a noise that people are hearing rather than seeing something. And that, more often than not, can be more frightening than actually experiencing something else.
Yeah. And in that case, it was just the acoustics of the attic and a squirrel pushing nuts across the floor. it was pretty funny for me. I have to tell you that it was, you know, I think the squirrel was upset, but in that story, I mentioned that when I was up in the attic, kind of staking it out, and I caught the squirrel. To test it, I rolled a nut across the floor and heard the people down below yelling, "Are you okay? We hear the footsteps." And then I threw a whole bunch of the nuts that I found across the floor. And I only did that for me. That was not for them. That was for me. You know, sometimes you have to do some things for yourself when you're out there, out in these cases. But I've run into many cases where there's normal explanations, but very often ones that being in this field and doing the investigations, you learn about unusual things that cause people to conclude that something is a haunting or activity. And some of it's pretty amusing and some of it's difficult, because sometimes it can be health related. Like, you know, there are people, fortunately, I haven't had more than one case like this, but there's black mold that can cause people to hallucinate, you know, so there, and also have them have chronic illness for the rest of their lives too. So there's a lot of things, silly and not so silly, that we have to look at. And sometimes we have to look at the combination of things in all of them, but we can't study the paranormal unless you eliminate all the normal first. Just like when we have ESP experiments in the lab, you have to remove any possibility of sensory leakage, anything your normal senses could get, and even logic and intuition has to be removed. Can't possibly know the answers to things.
Yeah, I think often that's one of the problems these days, is that whenever people seem to come across strange phenomenon, or they're having weird experiences or hearing strange things, sometimes people seem to just leap straight to the paranormal. Like, they don't seem to pull it apart, because it's almost as if they don't want a rational explanation. And I think for people such as ourselves, that's quite damaging in regards to the interests and cases that we look at, because they don't help anybody other than perpetuating same old myths.
Yeah, there was a real estate company in after the lockdown, after the COVID lockdown, who released a survey online, kind of an article about the survey. They had surveyed people because they realtors in this organization were getting complaints from people that their house was haunted. They'd never heard this from some of their clients before. They're getting an overarching number of them. And apparently the reported or people thinking their house was haunted had a huge leap in percentage during the lockdown. And rightly so, the realtors actually figured out, well, you're locked in your house for the first time for weeks at a time, 24 hours a day. You never notice the noises your house makes. You never notice things that might fall down because the house is moving, creaking, or other things that are happening. But like you said, they let people leap to the paranormal thing. The interesting thing was that the younger you were, the more likely you were to say it was paranormal. And that made sense to me, because if you've been old, if you're old enough and you've lived in homes long enough, you know that they make noises. So, yes. Yeah, people who are younger don't.
It is. I mean, it's one of those things. I think, like you say, a lot of it is people just aren't used to a house settling. When you go to where I've been here in the UK, I've been to a couple of notable haunted locations. And a lot of it, because I grew up in a very old house, which was haunted. But I also knew when the house was creaking, you know, if it was warm, you could feel the beams expanding. And when it was cold, you could hear them contracting, and it'd make pops and cracks and squeaks. You could tell what was just the house and what wasn't part of the haunting that was going on as we lived in the house for a bit. But it's amazing how many people just don't understand how the environment, even on a day-to-day basis, can affect the way they live. It's almost as if... Absolutely. Once again, as you were saying about how the younger people are more prone to being believers of the paranormal in regards to the noises their house makes, I think that's also a lot to do with the amount of technology people have. They don't know how noisy these items really are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and sometimes there's explanations that just defy explanation in some respects. One of my friends, one of my investigative friends who passed away a couple of years ago, had a case which he called the Polter Possum case. Because this woman was talking about all sorts of bangs and noises in her walls and pictures falling off the walls. And Pete, it was an older house and she had a lot of fixing up to do, apparently. But apparently some possums had gotten into the walls. They had an entry and exit so they could get in and out. Nobody died. None of the possums died in the walls. But he found some of the possums in the walls. And she refused to believe that that was the reason why things were happening in her house. even shown the evidence, she refused to believe that. So, you know, he kind of said he didn't know what to do at that point. I think he may have done some sort of ritual just to pretend and then called an animal control person for her.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that says more about the person's psychological frame of mind there. It's almost as if they want to be haunted, Lloyd.
And that probably is the case. You know, I know we've had cases reported to us that, after doing the because I insist on pre-interviews before I do anything or even send anybody out on a case. And every once in a while, I get asked an interesting question, like, you know, are you coming with a TV crew? Or do you think the story would make a good book? Or do you think their story could be sold to television or something as a movie? You know, and those are cases we just back away from quickly. Mm. And I know others who have shown up at places, and sometimes maybe they're connected to one of the groups on the TV show, even just nominally connected. That's how they get some of their own cases. And they'll show up and the people are mad because the TV crew's not there or the TV folks are not with them. So, you know, in those cases, we don't even know if the people really believe the stuff is paranormal. It's just that they want to be on TV. And most of the investigators, if they're any good, turn around and leave.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
I suppose, obviously, Laurie, with the amount of work that you've done, because, I mean, this is not a sort of attack on televisual ghost hunting, because you've appeared on countless programs over the years. So obviously, I've seen you on many yourself.
I'm better than others, yeah.
But it would seem that when we look at some of these cases and some of the reports, I remember seeing some of the hauntings that you would be investigating, say, on a program such as Sightings in the mid to late 90s, a lot of people would remain anonymous because they didn't want the publicity of being haunted or to believe they are haunted. And yet now you've got people, they'll come round, the whole family's there, and the crew turns up for a week or whatever, and everybody's sort of doing the investigation. And I suppose the biggest frustration of cases like that is that the real parapsychologists and the real studious investigators aren't getting these opportunities anymore, because for a lot of people it's straight to the TV. They want the ghost hunters, not the scientists.
Or they're going to the local ghost hunting group that has learned their craft by watching the TV shows, and so they, back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, they don't know what they're doing. You know, they're using gizmos and things like that. But you know, the whole equipment thing, honestly, is, you know, we have Tony Cornell, who was with the SPR for many, many years.
Yes.
You know, he had some environmental sensing equipment. Harry Price used some relative, what we would consider primitive environmental sensing equipment. So finding out what's going on in the environment when people have the experience versus when they don't, that's why we started using devices. I don't care if they have bells and whistles on them. I don't care if they light up. But TV producers have, and they have since Ghostbusters.
Yes.
You know, kiddingly, people were asking me at that point after Ghostbusters whether or not we had anything like those devices. They knew that we didn't.
Yeah.
But they wish we did. And they also wished for years I would be out on an investigation for a TV show, and they would want to shoot only at night. It's like, yeah. Okay, well, you know, if it's a cool place, great. But most of the shows we're going to shoot during when people have the experiences,
yeah,
or when it makes sense. But even if we're there at night, the director or producer who was with us would always want to turn the lights down, and in a few instances wanted to turn the lights out. At which point the camera guy said, yeah, you know, then we can't see anything. Because it was pre-Night Shot, right?
Yeah.
So once Night Shot became popular or became available, that's all they wanted to do, to make it look spooky, because spooky is what sells.
Green eyes, that's all you see for an hour these days, it would seem.
Yeah, and, you know, most people, it's like the ghost hunters are unaware that when they see shadows in Night Shot, it's because the Night Shot spotlight is actually creating shadows in infrared.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with any ghostly anything. Yeah. That's television. You know, they can say that kind of thing.
Yeah. I suppose, before I let you leave, Lloyd, obviously one of your, or even perhaps your most famous or favorite case is the Blue Lady.
Yeah, the Mosby story.
Which is quite ironic that we're talking about this, because I remember the first time I remember seeing a documentary about it in the 90s on a particular channel. It might have been on the Sci-Fi Channel, one of those sort of collections of famous ghost stories that you get, like California's Most Famous Ghost or something. Where they'll have some kind of arty narration over sort of some dramatic reconstructions of imagined events or something like that. And then about, I don't know, 2008, 2009, I think you mentioned in the book, another paranormal show went back there. And yet it was almost as if sometimes people will go to try and prove a famous haunting isn't real, because I don't understand what because I knew enough about that place to know that it had embraced its paranormal history. So as you say, and I mean, you don't go as far as to say this, a skeptical person would say that they ignored information that they were aware of to get the result that they wanted, Lloyd.
Right, right. They claimed they didn't know anything about the place because it the claim was that they don't investigate or get history or anything like that before they walk in, which was contradictory to almost every season before that show. And they, you know, nobody, it was a mess. I mean, partly because none of the witnesses wanted to talk to them because they knew how, I don't even know how they got permission to do the show. In fact, at the place, at the restaurant. Mm. But it was kind of a hatchet job. It was not done appropriately. And the thing is that, and I hear this sometimes from ghost hunters, you know, we went to such and such a case and we didn't find anything. The place is obviously a hoax. They're making it up. Well, you know, if you go to a place that's haunted, especially if there's an entity, a conscious entity there, why do they have to show up?
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not on the call list. They're not on the schedule. Nobody's made a deal with them to show up. So because you find nothing doesn't mean that other people didn't have an experience. In that case, with the distillery, the experiences go back to the 1930s.
Yeah.
So, you know, what they're basically doing by calling it a hoax is they're saying that every other witness is fooled, lying or otherwise at that point, because we know better.
Well, obviously. And you visited this location countless times, not just for the wonderful food, Lloyd, but obviously to speak to the witnesses and experience things. This is often the frustration that some of these teams will turn up for a day, 2 days at most, and expect to get all the evidence that's been reported over decades on tap, as you say, that, you know, they're not performers. These are apparitions. These are hauntings. These are things that go back way before this. And like you say, people in the 1930s couldn't possibly be planning on creating something that would run 80 years.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, I've been on cases where we didn't experience anything. We're basing it off the witness testimony and trying to figure out, number one, if there's any alternative explanation. And then if we don't get any evidence, especially if they're talking about an interactive apparition, it doesn't mean that apparition is not there, which is one of the reasons why I often bring in psychics and mediums who are of good quality to see if they can communicate or pick something up. And sometimes yes and sometimes no. We still don't dismiss those people's case or experience as lying or stupidity or gullibility or anything like that, because people are having genuine experiences.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it is peculiar. I've spoken to someone who lived in a haunted house who had exactly the same situation to him, Lloyd. Keith Linder, who has written a book about the Bothell poltergeist that he had. And he was essentially accused of faking it all by one of them, and ended up obviously in this modern era, as happened with the Blue Lady. The owners got a lot of sort of online grief about it and had very harassing phone calls because they were saying, oh, people were accusing them of perpetuating a hoax and just playing on it.
Yeah, it's, you know, if your heroes on TV don't find what the story is to be true, you take their word as truth, even though it's just TV. You know, there are many places that some of these folks have done on TV where they claim they're getting X, Y, and Z. And there have been places sometimes I've been to. Yeah, I don't think they're getting evidence of anything paranormal. I think they're just simply interpreting whatever they want as evidence of that because it makes a good story for that particular episode.
Well, Lloyd, I just want to say thank you very much for joining me. I could speak to you forever. However, I know you are one of the busiest men in the world of parapsychology, and that's even before you delve into your love of being a chocolatier. So where can everybody get your latest revamped book and follow your work going forward, sir?
So A Paranormal Casebook, the new edition, is available on Amazon worldwide, or at least it should be available on Amazon worldwide. It's also available on other online booksellers. I didn't go for just the Amazon distribution specifically for that. And many of my books are also available through Amazon UK, .com, CA, and all sorts of other places as well. And then I actually do an every other week live Q&A on YouTube, a little bit late for the UK. It's at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time on a Sunday night. So it's coming up on the 17th is the next one, and then also the 31st of March. But they're all recorded. So if you want to watch, go to youtube.com/@AskProfessorParanormal. That's the site for that. And folks can always check me out on my Facebook page, which is just simply facebook.com/lloyd.auerbach.author. And there's a new website coming. I can't announce it yet because it's not completed yet. So,
brilliant. Well, I'll put links as always into the show notes. And I just want to say thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to finally get a chance to spend some time. And I hope to get the opportunity to speak to you again in future, Lloyd. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.